From 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR, this is Lake Effect. I'm Joy Powers. Today on the show, how local faith leaders are encouraging social but not spiritual distancing. Then our astronomy contributor walks us through an at-home experiment that we can do to track the sun's movements.
I just wanted to get us comfortable with the idea that the sun is moving. I hear so many people think, well, of course the sun rises in the east and sets in the west. Even though they have experiences of their own that would belie that statement.
We learn how gardening can inspire creativity and expend some energy for kids who are stuck at home.
Gardening is wonderful because you can use math skills, art skills, scientific skills, all those things related to watching plants grow and starting them from seed.
Plus, an essay about mindfulness. Lake Effect is next, but first, the news. This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Joy Powers. April is a significant month for many faiths. Christians recently observed Easter. Passover was celebrated in the Jewish community. Sikhs celebrated Vaisakhi, and this week marks the start of Ramadan, observed by Muslims. During the pandemic, places of worship have been challenged to practice their faith in ways that don't involve physical gatherings. Some religious institutions in the U.S. have defied social distancing mandates and continued to hold in-person services. Some states have even included exceptions from the stay-at-home order for places of worship. But here in Wisconsin, some faith leaders have come out in support of Governor Evers' order. According to a release from the Interfaith Conference of Greater Milwaukee, they've, quote, chosen to demonstrate our love of neighbors by closing our doors during the COVID-19 pandemic. The Interfaith Conference's Executive Director Pardeep Kalika joins Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski to talk about this situation. They're also joined by Ahmed Qureshi of the Islamic Society of Milwaukee, Rabbi Hannah Wallach from the Milwaukee Jewish Federation, and the Right Reverend Stephen Andrew Miller, the Bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of Milwaukee. Bishop Miller begins by explaining how they're demonstrating faith and encouraging others.
Well, the first thing I would say that we've done is to really focus on staying at home, because that's one way that we love our neighbor, which is common to all of our Christian traditions. So first and foremost, it's been that. And I believe it was that unified statement of the Interfaith Council that led to this interview today.
So Rabbi Hannah, and you know, we just had Passover, and you know, like Stephen said, we also had a stay-at-home policy throughout our community, all segments, you know, unaffiliated, Reform to Orthodox. Our institutions were closed. We made sure that people had small seders with only their immediate family with whom they were sheltering in place. But a lot of people decided to use Zoom as their method for having a seder with their out-of-town relatives. And I heard a lot of great stories about how and creative uses of Zoom during their seders.
This is Ahmed Qureshi, Islamic Society of Milwaukee. So like other faith groups, we ourselves have also had to close all of our worship places in the greater Milwaukee area, and in fact, across the state of Wisconsin as well. We are concerned, of course, not only for our own congregants, but for the concern for our entire community about spreading this virus around something that we believe strongly has to be stopped. I mean, in fact, the Islamic prophetic tradition includes a statement that a person who is at a place where there is a plague or an illness should not go away from that place, nor should they go towards a place of plague itself. I would also indicate, and all of us on this interview today are part of various interfaith organizations. The Interfaith Conference of Greater Milwaukee prepared a joint prayer or reflection, which is now up on its website, in which various faith leaders composed prayers praying for the relief and recovery from this coronavirus illness disease that is going around.
With government leaders across the country questioning the constitutionality of shutting down churches and other places of worship or attempting to reopen churches for holidays, how has this messaging concerned you? And personally, there's been a lot of developments. Things continue to change. But has your view of the situation changed as things have developed?
Pardeep Kalika from the Interfaith Conference. You know, physically, I think just this, the seriousness of COVID-19 has really hit us. And I think it's felt much longer than a month, but it's really been a month since we've been taking measures to create safety. But this has created a physical, mental, and spiritual toll on us all. And, you know, I think what is coming to the surface really clearly is the inequities that exist and have existed for a very long time around race, class, poverty. And right now, with all of that being understood, what else is being understood is the true nature of people. And some people will go into a place where they seek safety because of fear, and they become preservationists because of fear. They retreat into whomever I, my, we is. But yet at the same time, there's also other people who have dedicated their life to service and really go above and beyond for outreach and dedicate their life to faith. And, you know, we're surrounded by three amazing leaders who have gone above and beyond and really have embraced this as not just a time where we're going through this tragedy together, but what is our spiritual journey through all of this? And I think because of that leadership, we'll come out of this much better than we went in.
Sure. Bishop Miller from the Episcopal Diocese. The interfaith letter came out of a response I wrote to State Senator Craig about 3 weeks earlier. And I reminded the senator in that letter that the church is about community and loving our neighbor. And that's our first care. And so the decision that we made as Episcopalians, that the Archdiocese of Milwaukee, the Roman Catholic Church, made, it really was out of that sense of religious freedom. And what is essential for us is that faith is about loving our neighbor first and foremost. So I suspect even if the stay-at-home order had not been issued, the Diocese of Milwaukee, the Episcopal Diocese, would have shut down its services, because that was the wise, healthy, and safe thing to do. And I think the political leaders need to worry about doing their job in this pandemic and not try and do the job of religious leaders. Certainly, this is a much busier time for us. Our diocese is putting on a diocesan-wide worship service via StreamYard every Sunday, and churches are supplementing that with Bible studies and coffee hours. And it's been a time of great creativity and opportunity. But I would really hope that the government folks would look particularly at making sure that basic human needs are met, doing something to stop the increased gun sales, which are rampant across this country, which is just going to result in more guns in homes. We need to remember that freedom is always freedom for others, not freedom from things.
I can just say, you know, the Jewish community really acted with one mind in Milwaukee, which is different actually from other Jewish communities. But the Milwaukee Jewish Federation, you know, right away we connected with all of our organizations and nonprofits and synagogues across the community to make sure that we were of one mind. For Judaism, the highest commandment is called pikuach nefesh, which is saving a life. You can even not do other commandments in order to save a life. So with COVID-19, it was clear that, you know, keeping physical distancing was the way that we could save lives. And we were lucky that we were all of one mind. Right now, the Milwaukee Jewish Federation has been reorganizing to serve need First, there was an immediate need that people didn't have access to kosher for Passover food like they usually would have. You know, usually people drive down to Chicago and, you know, go out and get everything they need for Passover. We had to make sure that people had Passover food. Also, you know, obviously our whole country is suffering financially. And so now we're reorganizing to make sure that people have access to immediate needs, including loans, including funds for bills that need to be paid, and really trying to reorganize to serve every aspect of our community, not just the spiritual life.
For our four major faiths, you know, this is the month for Passover, for Easter, for Ramadan, for Vaisakhi. We knew that going into this was going to be a tough month for all of our communities. And as far as coming back to faith, for all of us interfaith leaders, the value for life and human dignity is at the utmost of concern. And I think right now we have to ask, if there are people who are encouraging people to go back to normal, and we have the danger of reverting back and endangering people's lives, and that is your leadership, and they're speaking up and saying, go ahead and go back to normal because of economy's sake or because of something else, we really have to question why we hold that leadership and why we respect them, and do they really care about us? And I think right now is a telling time for a lot of people on what responsible leadership actually looks like.
A lot of people in congregations, they look to you as leaders, as sources of comfort, as voices of their religions. How do you feel as faith leaders right now? I imagine you're figuring out all the technological alternatives to hosting services and all of these other things. But do you feel extra burdens that are really challenging you? Or where are you trying to focus your energy now that your physical situations are different?
So our religious leadership has emphasized education about what the teachings are applicable to the situation that we're in. There's no doubt that the Islamic faith, just like other faiths, has a strong preference to do things as a community, to worship in congregation, to attend services, to attend our special holidays and celebrate as a community. And these are all sacrifices that the leadership has to ask the community members to understand and to make. So again, it's the emphasis on even saving a human life. If one can even save a single person, it is if they have saved all of humanity. It's the same teaching that is in the Jewish Christian faith as well as in Islamic tradition as well. And I think that people have come to understand that they just want to be reassured by the leadership that the decision is being taken based on sound religious principles. And so we seek to clearly convey that and the importance of following these rules that our governmental leaders are asking us, social distancing, trying to be safe, behave safely with each other.
Something that the rabbis in our community, we usually meet once a month, but since the crisis hit, we've actually been meeting once a week. And last week we had two psychiatrists come onto our call and give us some really important advice. You know, there's a increase in anxiety, increase in depression, an increase in senses of loneliness and isolation. And they gave us some practical tools to help with that, and also a reminder that spiritual leaders need to nourish themselves as well so that they can minister to the community. And one thing that the rabbis of the community did before Passover is we all made a video together to wish everybody a happy Passover. And the psychiatrist said that something, an effort like that, that helps people feel part of a community is a really important tool to help with feeling isolated and lonely. And they asked if we could put out a message all together every week. I don't know if we're going to be able to quite follow through on that, but you know, we have some celebrations ahead of us that we might also put out some communal messages. And so I think any effort like that to remind people they may be alone in their homes, but they're still part of a community, a larger community.
This is Bishop Stephen. I would echo that. Certainly, I'm very grateful for the people, and particularly the clergy of my diocese, who are a lot more tech savvy than I am, as we do a diocesan-wide service every Sunday. What I'm finding is that we're building community in new ways. And the other thing that we're beginning to see is people who have been on the fringes of our faith communities through these Zoom meetings and Zoom Bible studies and Zoom coffee hours, they're getting reconnected, which is really exciting for us, because I think things like this remind people of how important faith is. I see it not unlike when I was a priest in Northern Virginia, 10 miles from the Pentagon on September 11th. The next day we had 400 people as part of a worship service when we normally worshiped about 150. So I think this is a time of real opportunity. I think certainly as a bishop in the church, my job is to care for the clergy and people of my diocese. Our clergy are meeting weekly, and I'm spending a lot of time making individual phone calls, just checking on how folks are doing, because that's my role in a diocesan system. But it certainly is as busy as I have ever been in ordained ministry.
I think Bishop Miller makes a really important point in terms of new opportunities that are coming out of this situation as well. We've had the same experience, you know, record numbers at virtual synagogue attendance. One of our community educators, Jody Hirsch, teaches a class. He's a wonderful teacher. He's never had so many people attend his classes as have been attending virtually. So when we get to reopen, I think that these are some ideas that we need to bring forward with us.
So all in all, it sounds like just because we're practicing socially distancing doesn't necessarily mean it's spiritual distancing.
Not at all.
Let me just add this. This is Ahmed Qureshi. The Islamic holidays of the month of Ramadan, they begin on April 23rd and they'll go until May 24th. And it is a time of month when there's traditionally people are gathering together to break the fast. Some communal gatherings involve hundreds of people. 1,000 people or more may attend the night prayer. And it is a huge issue in our community that they're going to be asked to sacrifice this, just like my Jewish and Christian brothers and sisters had to make that sacrifice during Passover and Easter as well. And probably many other party mentioned the Sikh holiday, which occurred earlier this week as well. And so we might lose in our short-term view of things, though we're going to miss this, but we just have to keep in mind that there is a greater goal and a greater good to be served here. And if we can keep that in mind, we will be much better off in our mental framework towards the sacrifice that we are being asked to make as faith groups.
Pardeep.
Yeah, Ahmed touches on a really important point, and so does Bishop Miller and Rabbi Wallach. I think just right now, we will be going through this, and this will be a tough time for us going forward. And so it will be for the world. This is a pandemic, and it's affecting people and obviously exposing lots of inequities. We have the relative privilege in this country to not work for $1 or $2 per day and not to have our economic life just kind of upheavaled. But I think what we can do for the world is, the people of faith know sacrifice, we know suffering, we know compassion, and we know kindness. What we can do right now is just to develop a closer bond with one another. And maybe that's what all of this is all about, is to develop a real interconnected bond, bringing us closer when we come out of this, so that we can heal. Because that's going to be another part of this, is to, we're not going to come out of this and just go back to normal. And maybe we shouldn't. Maybe we shouldn't go back to whatever that normal was. But to learn from this and build future generations who will take those inequities much more seriously than we took them.
Mm-hmm. Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski spoke with Pardeep Kalika, the executive director of the Interfaith Conference of Greater Milwaukee. They were also joined by Bishop Stephen Miller, Ahmed Qureshi of the Islamic Society of Milwaukee, and Rabbi Hannah Wallach. You're listening to Lake Effect on Milwaukee's NPR. Lake Effect continues now on WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. While Wisconsin is having a hard time keeping consistent spring weather, one thing we do notice this time of year is more daylight. But how does the positioning of the sun change course over the year? And how does it affect us? Our astronomy contributor Gene Creighton says that now is a great time for us to ask and answer these questions. As we all spend more time in the same place, we can be more purposeful in observing the sun's patterns. So for this month's astronomy conversation, Creighton joins Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski and invites all of us to do a simple experiment.
Gene Creighton, welcome back to Lake Effect.
Nice to see you, Audrey.
Now, it's a little colder today, but, you know, Wisconsin's trying to get into our spring weather here. But the one thing we do notice is a little more daylight throughout the sky. So what is it about the positioning of the sun that changes over the course of the year?
This is a great time to ask this question because many people find themselves with a little more time in the same place. So you can be more purposeful in figuring out the pattern for yourself, observing the pattern for yourself. So before I talk about what's going on, I'd like to invite our listeners to do an experiment. And this involves finding a spot in front of your house. Now, if you're the kind of person who's likely to be up early in the morning, then you should find a spot that's facing somewhere in the east, but to have a fairly good view of an eastern horizon. If you're the kind of person who's not likely to be awake or willing to be outside at 7, then you should probably get a western horizon so that you see the setting sun. A lot of people have this idea that the sun rises in the east and sets in the west. But of course, if you think about it, you know that there's certain times of year when the light streams in your house and you have to close the curtains, and sometimes it really doesn't. So this is where we're going to try and do the science thing and actually make a discovery for ourselves. Find the spot in front of your house, either facing east or facing west, and find out when is sunrise or sunset every day. And be out a few minutes before then. I'm envious of the people who have the time. They take their coffee, and I see there's a group of people for years who go and see the sunrise over Lake Michigan every day. I'm envious, but maybe this is your time to do it. It's important to be in the same place. Take a picture of that horizon for you, and it's useful if there's a tree or other reference points, houses, chimneys, so you can be specific. Today, the sun rose exactly to the left of the chimney of my neighbor, Margaret. Okay. See where it rises tomorrow. Now, sometimes experiments are not perfect, and maybe tomorrow there is a strategic cloud right in front of the sun, and it's not going to allow you to do this measurement, but you get to see a beautiful sunrise. And one of the things that I appreciate when I look at sunrise or sunset, they're never the same. Even if you can't exactly see the position of the sun, because of where the clouds are, at what height, what the quality of the air is, the colors that you see are going to be different. So even if that's all you get, another beautiful sunrise, bully for you. Okay, by day 3 or 4, this time of year, we can expect to get another clear day. At that point, you will see that the sun is a little north of where it was today. And I don't want to ruin the discovery for you, but sometimes it's nice to know, what am I supposed to see? So it's going to be a little north. And this trend is going to continue. In fact, it has been this way since the winter solstice, the sun has been heading ever so slightly to the north. Now it's going gangbusters because we're around the just after the spring equinox, and this trend will continue. The sun will continue to move every day north until the summer solstice. That's into June. Notice also that it is going to be happening a little earlier every day. And although it might be perfectly reasonable to see the sun rise in early April, by the time June rolls around, it could be that unless you are a very dedicated dog walker, you're probably not up at 5:30 in the morning. So it's easier to do the experiment now than it is in June.
Especially with perhaps some willing younger family members at home.
That's right. Now I think you have a chance. I remember when my kids were really little, it would not have been unusual for me to be up and about at six. So this might be a great way to have kids have that experience with you. Now, let's say, though, that you have whatever obligations, maybe you have a family, maybe you don't, you're not up really in the morning first thing or at sunset, because at sunset you're thinking thoughts that have to do with dinner, and I'm very sympathetic to that. The other experiment that you could do, which could be any time as long as the sun is out, is to stand on the sidewalk in front of your house or anywhere and draw, you need a friend to do this, draw the shadow of yourself on this pavement. And guess where is the end of your shadow going to be in an hour or whenever you think you'll be able to check. Put a little X there. And in an hour, check it out. Sometimes people are surprised of how much that's moved or not. And what you should do is try that a few times at different times of the day. And then that will kind of build some capacity you have of really appreciating where is the sun at different times of the day and how dramatically shadow changes.
Now, is it the sun's solar cycle itself that causes the angle of the sun to change over time, or does the Earth's tilt affect this? Is it a combination of both?
It has mostly to do with the tilt of the Earth. I mean, the tilt of the Earth is what's driving seasons. And I've taught seasons for many years, and I realize that people have their first response is, well, I know what causes the seasons. But in fact, most people don't. So what I would say is the real thing to appreciate about the seasons is the two observable things we have about them, that the sun is up longer certain times of the year and that it's higher. And the fact that that's connected to the tilt of the Earth is a secondary concern. But let's acknowledge that the length of the day is longer certain times of the year. They max out on the summer solstice. If you live in the Northern Hemisphere, that's in usually the third week of June. If you live in the Southern Hemisphere, that is the third week of December. And that the height of the sun is different. And I guess a great experiment to do at home is if you take a flashlight and shine it on a piece of paper at a very low angle, you get an amount of light that fills a huge area. So if you're a little ant on that area, the amount of light you get per ant is not very much because it's been spread out in all this area. Now, if you take your flashlight and you put it directly overhead, then the area that it shines is actually pretty small, but that means that the individual ant gets much more energy from that flashlight, which means that it is much better at heating up our ground. And it has more time to do it, which is why we see such dramatic changes in temperature. Now, it is a fair question. Well, wait a second. If our longest and most intense light is on the third, in the third week of June. Why isn't that the warmest day that we have? Well, it takes a while for the earth and water to warm up or cool down. Usually the warmest days are about a month later, because that's the lag. We live by a lake, which means that it can soak up a whole lot of energy before it warms up. And that makes the effect even more noticeable. So it tends to be about a month later.
Bit of a defrosting picture in my brain when you take something out of the fridge.
That's right, freezer. Exactly. That's right.
Now, with the sun, I was learning that, as you were mentioning before, it's a bit more complicated than simply rising and setting over time. When people have tracked this over photographs, the sun actually has a figure eight motion.
It is more complicated. I just wanted to get us comfortable with the idea that the sun is moving. I hear so many people think, well, of course the sun rises in the east and sets in the west, even though they have experiences of their own that would belie that statement. I would just like people to do the experiment, see where the sun is. And as I said, I think even if the morning or the evening isn't possible, try a midday, play with some chalk and see where the sun is putting your shadow.
Definitely great activities for all of us to keep in mind and be a little more mindful of as we observe changes in our home environment, and especially light.
Right. It occurred to me that if the weather is not, isn't great in terms of, or for whatever reason, you really need to stay inside, I'm wondering whether you can use your own home and windows with reference points. The important part is that you observe from the exact same place, but if you manage to do that, you could probably do this experiment just by looking out and figuring out, oh, put a little post-it. Here is where the sun was today, and here where it is tomorrow.
All right. Well, certainly great ideas to do to keep us busy during this time. Jean Creighton, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Audrey. This was great fun.
Jean Creighton is our astronomy contributor and the director of UW-Milwaukee's Manfred Olson Planetarium. She spoke with Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski, and you can find all of our past segments with her at WUWM.com. Lake Effect will return in just a moment on Milwaukee's NPR. Lake Effect continues now on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. Many of us have been cooped up in our homes as we collectively ride out this pandemic. But the stay-at-home order doesn't necessarily mean that you need to stay inside. And for those of us who are living with kids, getting out in the garden can be a great way to get rid of some energy and exercise their creativity. Melinda Myers is a gardening expert and the author of Midwest Gardener's Handbook and Small Space Gardening, among many other titles. She joins me now to talk about gardening projects for kids of all ages. Melinda Myers, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect.
Hey, it's great to be chatting with you. So many people are in gardening, so it's a very good time to be talking gardening with you.
It is. How are you doing right now, being stuck at home as a gardener?
Luckily, the weather's been okay, so I've been able to start some seeds indoors. I've been still doing some winter sowing, and I've been doing some cleanup. My asparagus is just peeking through the ground. I got that area weeded and cleaned up, the dead material removed, so there's hope. Spring is on the way. I miss all my activities with gardeners, though. Spring is the time I'm out and about, and I get to meet people and hear what they're doing, and I so miss that personal contact like so many of us do.
Yeah, how have you been using your time in general, and how are other gardeners using this time at home, which it is both a blessing and a curse?
Exactly. I was just talking to someone. We were sharing how we like to shop at garden centers. We like to meander up and down the aisles and see what's new and different. And, you know, you come with a list, but you always end up buying more than you take home. Well, now a lot of garden centers are open because they're selling essentials, food plants, herb plants, but a lot of them are doing call ahead, curbside pickup, or delivery just to keep everyone safe, or limiting your time time in the garden center. So you really can't do that wandering. So I've been trying to do a better job of planning, you know, going over my garden list. Okay, what do I really need? What do I want? What do I really need? And then luckily, if you have a good relationship with the garden center, I work with Ebert's Greenhouse Village, and they know me. So when I shop there, I go, okay, what's new, what's cool, what's different I need? So that's on my list. Just put some cool different things you know I want to grow. And so if you have a good relationship with your local garden center, and if they can, I mean, time is going to be very challenging these days. Everybody wants to get plants and wants to get what they want and pick their own. But if you have a good relationship, you might be able to say, hey, I need some yellow flowers for a sunny area. Surprise me. You know, if you like to try new things. If you don't, then be very specific. I want yellow zinnias because I have sunshine and I want low maintenance and I want the butterflies to come. You know, so the more specific we can be and the more time we spend planning, and make planning fun. If you have kids at home, get out the catalogs, get out the pictures, the crayons, have the kids help you plan the garden. You know, what do you like to eat? Draw pictures of your vegetables you like to eat. You know, and there are purple carrots out there. So if they draw purple carrots, guess what? You can grow them for them. And then the other thing is to go through your garage and your basement and your shed and look for items that you might be heading to the recycling center eventually, or, you know, getting rid of or throwing away. Maybe they could be a good container. You know, I save the cylinder that Easter eggs came in, and I drilled some holes in the bottom. I'm growing long carrots in just for fun. And cool season crops like beets, carrots, and radishes are good to plant right now. I have some old toys of my grandkids and drilled holes in the bottom of this little wagon, and I've grown greens in it before. One year when my granddaughter was little, I started too early though, and she came over to visit, and she goes, "That's my wagon, Grandma." But luckily the handle was intact so she could pull it around with the greens. Now she's 12, she doesn't care. But, you know, a good memory. So might be some ways to do that. And pansies, oh, they're the happy spring flower. You can't look at a pansy, right, and not smile. So looking for those plants that take the cool weather. Wait for your tomatoes and peppers. I talked to a few garden centers that said, yep, people want to plant their tomatoes. And it's still pretty cold, so you'll be doing a second crop of tomatoes if you plant now. So wait for those until it gets warmer, the end of May and early June. Prepare your garden. And then look at your landscape. There's a lot you can do in your landscape. You know, last year we had so much rain and a lot of people experienced flooded basements and problems. And then we have droughts when we either have too much or not enough rain. If you've got a rain barrel, get the kids busy painting. You know, it's a great way to dress up that rain barrel. The kids will have fun and some ownership. And it helps them understand the water, the rainfall hits the roof, runs off. It goes in this rain barrel that they can then use to water their flowers in their garden. So it's a good lesson. Fresh Coast Guardians has great ideas on their website of ways to keep water where it falls and out of our basement. My grandson is a great digger. We were putting mulch down one time, and every time I'd look, he was jumping up and down, and I thought, oh, he'll never get his mulch in place. Lo and behold, he had spread it faster than my granddaughter and I working together did it. He loves to dig holes. So if you've got projects where you need some digging, you might have the right kid in your family. Give them a shovel. Work off that energy. You know, it helps them be focused. If they've been inside and schoolwork is a challenge because you're the teacher now, hey, send them outside for some gardening and a little time with nature.
You mentioned, of course, kids are doing school at home right now, but some kids really aren't getting the same kind of mental stimulation that you might when you go to school. What are some good gardening projects that will really get them engaged in those kinds of mental exercises?
You know, that's a great question. And gardening is wonderful because you can use math skills, art skills, scientific skills, all those things related to watching plants grow and starting them from seed. So starting plants from seeds is usually an activity they do in the classroom. I don't know if you did it, but I think everybody I talked to started the beans with a paper towel in the jar, right? And you watch how it grew and the roots grew. Well, microgreens are an edible version of that. So you buy microgreen or sprouting seeds, plant them, and you harvest them using scissors in 10 days. So you get to eat the harvest. So you see the seeds sprout and grow. You can even pull them out by the roots, rinse off the soil. KidsGardening.org is a free website, and they have classroom projects and family projects for kids. And they really teach science and nutrition, so plant science, nutrition, environmental issues. And there are activities that are planned for families and teachers to use. So everything, here's what you need, here's what you need to do, and here's how you can keep it involved. I like doing microgreens. I like planting radishes because they're quick. You get fast results. So you don't have to wait forever for that tomato. Plant those too, but if you have something that keeps the kids excited, greens. You know, my partner, he doesn't like his vegetables too well, but I've been growing greens under LED lights for the last 2 months and harvesting, and he thinks those are the best salads he's ever eaten. So, you know, if you grow it, they're more likely to eat it. And it's not just the kids and the family that you may need to train. And then how about doing some plant markers? You know, get out the paints, have kids write the name of the plant so you're working on your spelling. Take some old rocks, paint pictures of the vegetables or flowers. And again, write the name so you practice your letters and your spelling. And then plant some seeds of flowers. Marigolds and zinnias are popular. They bloom 8 weeks after you plant the seeds. They're easy to grow. We've all probably done it for Mother's Day. I know sometimes the teacher kind of goes out and buys marigolds if they have a crop failure, but those are some fun things. And then think of art projects that go along with it. If you do have flowers, flower pounding is fun. Take those pansies, a couple flowers, put them on a piece of paper, pound it with a rock or a hammer. Be careful the age of the children that are doing the pounding. And that'll leave a colorful imprint on that paper. Make it into a card. Send it off to someone. You know, make someone's day. Share some of that beauty as well. So then they'll practice lettering, how to send a letter, where a stamp goes, some of those return address, depending on the age of the children and how much exposure they've had.
If you do have older kids, what are some activities that are good for someone who is maybe in older middle school or in high school?
You know, a couple things. Planning a garden. You know, measure out the space. Put them in charge. Okay, you've got this space, or hey, we're going to grow vegetables this summer, and here's the area. Measure it out. Calculate how many plants we need. You know, what do you have them? Put them in charge. The only problem with putting the kids in charge is you better live with their decision unless you can kindly direct them the way you want. But you know what? Maybe you'll have, 1 year my daughter, when she was younger, grew popcorn, and we lived in the city. There really wasn't space for that. We had just a small basket full. We ended up popping it in the microwave. It was a fun adventure. Not the most productive, but it was a memorable event. She got to learn a little bit about different types of corn and different types of vegetables. It's Arbor Day. You know, Arbor Day is the last Friday in April, but it should be celebrated all year long. It's not only about planting a tree, it's also about taking care of a tree. Maybe they can do some research. You know, what kind of care does a tree need? If you're going to add a tree, have them research what plants would do well in Wisconsin. What kind of growing conditions do you have in your yard? Monitor the sunlight throughout the day. They'll be amazed to see when those leaves come up, oh, it's a lot shadier than it was before. And it's not just children and young adults that have that issue. We all get busy and we forget to watch how our environment changes. So monitoring the environment. If you can go around your neighborhood and their trees, do some bark rubbings. And then as the trees start to leaf out, see if you can identify the trees in the neighborhood. I think we're going to be growing some good horticulturists here after all of this, because more and more people that are stuck inside are looking for ways to get outside and relate to the environment. National Geographic has a safari, COVID-19 safari, where everybody's supposed to research animals and put pictures in their windows. You're probably seeing more chalk art in the neighborhood and pictures in people's windows. We could do the same with plants, create a garden in the windows as well. On my Facebook, we've been doing daily tips, and I'm trying to find things that are affordable and projects that you have most, if not all, of the materials at home, because we're supposed to stay safer at home. A lot of us, our budgets have gotten a lot tighter since many of us aren't working full-time or in the same pay grade or at all. And so trying to help people find activities for all ages that they can afford to do together or by themselves.
Well, and one of the things that I've seen a lot of people more interested in is growing things from what we'd essentially call kitchen scraps, things like the bottom of celery or lettuces.
Oh, exactly. And that's a fun thing to do. If you have sweet potatoes grow, they have a growing point at the top. So you save the top, plant that either directly in soil, or you could put toothpicks in water like you do an avocado seed, and then it'll grow into a vine. I did that just a few years ago. My excuse is it was for a tip, but it was fun to do. Your potatoes, if occasionally I find one growing in my pantry, cut it into pieces. And that would be fun if there are several of you in the family. Have a contest. See whose grows first and biggest, you know. Celery, you're right. Take that bottom of the celery and plant it, maybe an onion. Kitchen scrap gardening has been around a long time. Some people do it and plan on eating the results. It won't feed a family of four, but boy, it's a lot of fun. You'll have some free plants from those scraps and you put them to work. Or the other thing you can do is use them for printing. Use them as a print block. So cut that pepper in half, maybe one that's going bad or just a slice, dip it in some paint and press it onto paper or fabric. And it's a great way to create some artwork as well.
All right, well, Melinda Myers, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect, sharing some of your tips, and hopefully you're staying safe.
You too. Thanks so much, Joy, and good luck to everybody as they start a garden for the first or 100th time.
Melinda Myers is an expert in all things gardening and a regular Lake Effect contributor. You can find more of our monthly conversations at WUWM.com. Lake Effect will continue in just a moment on Milwaukee's NPR. More of Lake Effect now. I'm Joy Powers. Many of us have had a lot on our minds. We're practicing social distancing, unable to see our family and friends. We're navigating working and learning from home. And with everything that's going on, it's easy to get overwhelmed. But practicing mindfulness can help. Lake Effect contributor Barbara Miner found we can all learn something about being mindful from watching children.
I've always been intrigued by the practice of mindfulness and the art of living in the present. Over the years, I've bought books on mindfulness, listened to CDs, subscribed to podcasts, and always promised myself that I would be more mindful. But like many good intentions, it never seemed to stick. Sometimes it was my Catholic upbringing that got in the way, with its fondness for guilt over past sins. Sometimes it was just old-fashioned worrying about the future, even the ridiculous kind, like whether you should take that yoga class. Last fall, however, I had the good fortune to spend time with a mindfulness master. In classic Zen fashion, he never announced himself a master. He led by example. I was in Brooklyn for 3 months helping take care of my 4-month-old grandson River as my daughter returned to work. Her older child, 2.5-year-old Cashel, would be at daycare. New York's schedules are crazy and the subway's unpredictable, so I agreed to pick up Cashel from daycare. Around 4:30, I would put River in the stroller and we'd leave to get his brother. Cashel was too big to carry and so was expected to walk the half mile back home. I worried how to keep him distracted. We were all tired by that time of day, and I knew I wouldn't have my daughter's patience should a toddler tantrum erupt. I also knew that concepts of the past and the future don't mean much to a 2-year-old. It was meaningless to bribe Cashel with the promise of a cookie when we got home. I had to figure out how to keep him happy in the here and now. It ended up being less difficult than I feared. Toddlers, it turns out, are mindfulness masters. Their default is to live in the present. If they want a banana, they want it now. If they want to read a book, they want to read it now. And because they're constantly trying to figure out the world, they are acutely aware of their surroundings. I had become oblivious to many of the sights and sounds of New York. Not Cashel. He was the one, for instance, who noticed the nearby church bells that rang as we left daycare at 5 p.m. Taking cues from Cashel and building on his awareness of those bells, we developed a routine I came to treasure. We'd begin by counting the church bells. As we continued our walk, we'd count the planes flying overhead toward LaGuardia Airport, the number of city buses that drove by, or fire engines or trucks. We'd describe the colors of the sky as the sun set. As the days grew shorter and the sky darker, we'd look for the moon. At the time, I viewed a routine as a matter of survival. Looking back, I realize that I learned more about mindfulness during those walks than any book or podcast could ever teach. I think about Cashel and River a lot during this era of COVID-19, and not just because they are far away and I want to see them and hug them and know that everything is okay. Perhaps more than any time in my life, I feel little control over my future. The past, meanwhile, seems increasingly irrelevant. I remind myself to live in the present, and I think of Cashel and our walks home. My husband Bob and I live in a neighborhood where we can take walks while maintaining social distance. We have nowhere special to go and no need to hurry. In the spirit of Cashel, we try to be mindful. We stop and listen to the robins. We appreciate the daffodils and crocuses that are a harbinger of spring and, one hopes, the rebirth of life. Last week, we spent several minutes watching the garbage trucks as they picked up the containers in our neighborhood. I wish Cashel were with us, Bob said, echoing my thoughts. He would love following the garbage trucks. It would make his day.
Barbara Miner is a writer, photographer, and producer. You can find more of her work at WUWM.com. We have time to close out today's show with a song recorded in the Lake Effect Performance Studio when singer-songwriter and indie rock band leader Juliana Hatfield came to town. Her latest project involves cover albums, so here she is performing Olivia Newton-John's Please, Mr. Please.
In the corner of the bar, there stands a jukebox with the best of country music, old and new. You can hear your five selections for a quarter and somebody else's songs when yours are through. I got good Kentucky whiskey on the counter, and my friends around to help me ease the pain. Till some button pushing cowboy plays that love song, and here I am just missing you again. Please, mister, please, don't play B-17.
And that wraps up today's show. I'm Joy Powers. Thank you so much for tuning in today. And please join us again tomorrow for another edition of Lake Effect on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. It's 11 o'clock, and stay tuned. Fresh Air is next.
I wanna hear that song again.